Again, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Text Number 3. Questions by the sages. Nigamakalpataror galatam phalam shukumukhat amrata drava sanyutam pivata bhagavatam rasam alayam muhurahora sikabhui bhavukaha. Translation: O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarine juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Please repeat. O expert and thoughtful men.
O expert and thoughtful men.
Relish Srimad Bhagavatam.
Relish Srimad Bhagavatam.
The mature fruit of the desire tree.
The mature fruit of the desire tree.
Of Vedic literatures.
Of Vedic literatures.
It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukdeva Goswami.
It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukdeva Goswami.
Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful.
Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful.
Although its nectarine juice was already relishable.
Although its nectarine juice was already relishable.
For all.
Including liberated souls.
Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In the previous two shlokas, it has been definitely proved that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the sublime literature which surpasses all other Vedic scriptures due to its transcendental qualities. It is transcendental to all mundane activities and mundane knowledge. In this shloka, it is stated that Srimad Bhagavatam is not only a superior literature, but it is the ripened fruit of all Vedic literatures. In other words, it is the cream of all Vedic knowledge. Considering all this, patient and submissive hearing is definitely essential. With great respect and attention, one should receive the message and lessons imparted by the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Vedas are compared to the desire tree because they contain all things knowable by man. They deal with mundane necessities as well as spiritual realization. The Vedas contain regulated principles of knowledge covering social, political, religious, economic, military, medicinal, chemical, physical, and metaphysical subject matter, and all that may be necessary to keep the body and soul together. Above and beyond all this are specific directions for spiritual realization. Regulated knowledge involves a gradual raising of the living entity to the spiritual platform, and the highest spiritual realization is knowledge that the personality of Godhead is the reservoir of all spiritual tastes or dasas. Every living entity, beginning from Brahma, the firstborn living entity, for firstborn living being within the material world, down to the insignificant ant, desires to relish some sort of taste derived from sense perceptions. These sensual pleasures are technically called rasas. Such rasas are of different varieties. In the revealed scriptures, the following 12 varieties of rasas are enumerated. 1. Raudra, anger. 2. Adbhuta, wonder. 3. Shringara, conjugal love. 4. Hasya, comedy. 5. Vira, chivalry. 6. Daya, mercy. 7. Dasya, servitorship. 8. Sakya, fraternity. 9. Bhayanaka, horror. And 10. Bibhatsa, shock. And 11. Shanta, neutrality. And 12. Vatsalya, parenthood. The sum total of all these rasas is called affection or love. Primarily, such signs of love are manifested in adoration, service, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. And when these five are absent, love is present indirectly in anger, wonder, comedy, chivalry, fear, shock, and so on. For example, when a man is in love with a woman, the rasa is called conjugal love. But when such love affairs are disturbed, there may be wonder, anger, shock, or even horror. Sometimes love affairs between two persons culminate in ghastly murder scenes. Such rasas are displayed between man and man and between animal and animal. There is no possibility of an exchange or rasa between a man and an animal or between a man and any other species of living beings within the material world. The rasas are exchanged between members of the same species, but as far as the spirit souls are concerned, they are one qualitatively with the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the rasas were originally exchanged between the spiritual living being and the Supreme Whole, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual exchange of rasa is fully exhibited in spiritual existence between living beings and the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is therefore described in the Vedic, in the Shruti Mantras, Vedic hymns, as the fountainhead of all rasas. When one associates with the Supreme Lord and exchanges one's constitutional rasa with the Lord, then the living being is actually happy. These Shruti Mantras indicate that every living being has its constitutional position, which is endowed with a particular type of rasa, to be exchanged with the Personality of Godhead. In the liberated condition only, this primary rasa is experienced in full. In the material existence, the rasa is experienced in the perverted form, which is temporary. And thus, the rasas of the material world are exhibited in the material form of raudra, anger, and so on. Therefore, one who attains full knowledge of these different rasas, which are the basic principles of activities, can understand the false representations of the original rasas, which are reflected in the material world. The learned scholar seeks to relish the real rasa in the spiritual form. In the beginning, he desires to become one with the Supreme. Thus, less intelligent transcendentalists cannot go beyond this conception of becoming one with the spirit whole without knowing of the different rasas. In this shloka, it is definitely stated that spiritual rasa, which is relished even in the liberated stage, can be experienced in the literature of the Srimad Bhagavatam, due to its being the ripened fruit of all Vedic knowledge. By submissively hearing this transcendental literature, one can attain the full pleasure of his heart's desire. But one must be very careful to hear the message from the right source. Srimad Bhagavatam is exactly received from the right source. It was brought by Narad Muni from the spiritual world and given to this to his disciple Sri Vyasadeva. The latter in turn delivered the message to his son Srila Shukdeva Goswami, and Srila Shukdeva Goswami delivered the message to Maharaj Parikshit just 7 days before the king's death. Srila Shukdev Goswami was a liberated soul from his very birth. He was liberated even in the womb of his mother, and he did not undergo any sort of spiritual training after his birth. At birth, no one is qualified, neither in the mundane nor in the spiritual sense. But Sri Shukdev Goswami, due to his being a perfectly liberated soul, did not have to undergo an evolutionary process for spiritual realization. Yet despite his being a completely liberated person, situated in the transcendental position above the three material modes, he was attracted to this transcendental rasa of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is adored by liberated souls who sing Vedic hymns. The Supreme Lord's pastimes are more attractive to liberated souls than to mundane people. He is of necessity not impersonal, because it is only possible to carry on transcendental rasa with a person. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are narrated, and the narration is systematically depicted by Srila Shukdev Goswami. Thus the subject matter is appealing to all classes of persons, including those who seek liberation and those who seek to become one with the Supreme Whole. In Sanskrit, the parrot is also known as Shuka. When a ripened fruit is cut by the red beaks of such birds, its sweet flavor is enhanced. The Vedic fruit, which is mature and ripe in knowledge, is spoken through the lips of Srila Shukdev Goswami, who is compared to a parrot, not for his ability to recite the Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from his learned father, but for his ability to present the work in a manner that would appeal to all classes of men. The subject matter is so presented through the lips of Srila Shukdev Goswami that any sincere listener that hears submissively can at once relish transcendental tastes which are distinct from the perverted tastes of the material world. The ripened fruit is not dropped all of a sudden from the highest planet of Krishna Loka. Rather, it has come down carefully through the chain of disciplic succession without change or disturbance. Foolish people who are not in the transcendental disciplic succession commit great blunders by trying to understand the highest transcendental rasa, known as the rasa dance, without following in the footsteps of Shukdev Goswami, who presents this fruit very carefully by stages of transcendental realization. One should be intelligent enough to know the position of Srimad Bhagavatam by considering personalities like Shukdev Goswami, who deals with the subject so carefully. The process of disciplic succession of the Bhagavata school suggests that in the future, also, Srimad Bhagavatam has to be understood from a person who is factually a representative of Srila Shukdev Goswami. A professional man who makes a business out of reciting the Bhagavatam illegally is certainly not a representative of Shukdev Goswami. Such a man's business is only to earn his livelihood. Therefore, one should refrain from hearing the lectures of such professional men. Such men usually go to the most confidential part of the literature without undergoing the gradual process of understanding this grave subject. They usually plunge into the subject matter of the rasa dance, which is misunderstood by the foolish class of men. Some of them take this to be immoral, while others try to cover it up by their own stupid interpretations. They have no desire to follow in the footsteps of Srila Shukdev Goswami. One should conclude, therefore, that the serious student of the rasa should receive the message of Bhagavatam in the chain of disciplic succession from Srila Shukdev Goswami, who describes the Bhagavatam from its very beginning, and not whimsically to satisfy the mundaner who has very little knowledge in transcendental science. Srimad Bhagavatam is so carefully presented that a sincere and serious person can at once enjoy the ripened fruit of Vedic knowledge simply by drinking the nectarine juice through the mouth of Shukdev Goswami or his bona fide representative. Om Agnana Timirantasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namam Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yutapada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakhan Vitam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamani Hare Priye Pancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya eva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Phalam Shukamukhat Amrita Drava Sanyutam Pibata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam Muhurahor Sikabhuli Bhavukaha O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Shri Shukdev Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarine juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Nigama and Agama, these are the two classes of Vedic literatures. Nigama being the Vedic literatures and corollaries themselves, and Agama being outside literatures, which usually corroborate the same. So this is the kalpataru, this is the desire tree, whatever you have set your mind upon, sankalpa, that thing you can get from this nigama, from this Srimad Bhagavatam. And its fruit is galitam phalam. It is the ripened fruit. So, I didn't have time to prepare for this class very much, but Sridhar Swami, at least, says that this should be heard not only because it's the best of the Shastras, but it should be served with great reverence and affection, as Srila Prabhupada's purport reflects, because it's the ripened fruit of that kalpataru. The Vedas serve every known purpose, as Prabhupada writes also, to man. And phalam is the It's actually received from Vaikuntha via Vyasdev, Narad Muni, Shukdev, and others. And they've distributed it likewise among their shishyas and prashishyas. therefore it's become galitam. It's successively sweetened, just like we have mahaprasadam. When we take mahaprasadam, everyone relishes. There's a special taste to mahaprasadam directly from the deity's plate. But if that mahaprasadam has also been honored by one's spiritual master, then it becomes maha-maha-prasadam. In a similar way, this thing is coming like that. So galitam, we heard yesterday that this was composed by Vyas in his maturity, and the fruit is also being reflected in its maturity. The same idea. And amrita drava sanyutam, just as in this world, it's prasiddha, it's very well known that the parrot will peck at the fruit and make it sweeter. Do you know this? Indians know this. For Americans, it's a new idea. We don't really have mangoes everywhere in the West. Certainly in Northeast Europe, you don't have mangoes, right? Maybe you get them in the... They're picked 6 months before when they're green, and then they're ripened in some storeroom somewhere. So that's a different kind of ripening. Arguably ripened. But this fruit, if it's pecked by the red beaks of these birds, these shuka birds, Prabhupada says, then it becomes soft. Drava. Amrita drava sanyatam. Amrita. So amrita means paramananda. And it is dravarasa. This harkens back to the Taittiriya Upanishad, which is quoted by Sridhar Swami. Raso vaisa rasam hyevayam labdvanandi bhavati. Those persons who get this rasa, then they become anandis. They become blissful. Because actually the rasa is the essence of everything, as Prabhupada is explaining in his purport. It's the essence of all experience in this material world. He says activities, there are two things. There are activities and there are knowledge as well. But rasa pervades all of them. Because the thing that impels someone to act in this world is rasa only. And the thing that makes knowledge attractive is another kind of rasa also. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this rasa that you get from mundane things in this material world, that's not really rasa. Real rasa means you have to hear the descriptions of the wonderful pastimes of Gaurachandra, Godruma, Kanana Kunjavitham. So whether it's kavya rasa or any other kind of rasa, it's not really rasa in this material world. And Prabhupada has elaborated on this in his purport. We get, therefore, ghastly murder scenes when someone's so-called madhuri rasa becomes exposed for what it is. It's perverse. Pseudo-rasas. Pseudo-relationships. As Prabhupada, we heard the other day. Mercenary relationships. All relationships in this material world are basically for hire. It's like prostitution. She doesn't love you, but she'll pretend that she loves you, as long as you're paying. Therefore, Shankaracharya also says, what is that? As long as you're able, yavat vitto parjana sakta, tavan nijaparivaro rakta. Right? Paschat. Paschati jarjara dehe jivati, right? I saw this with my mother. Paschat jivati jarjara dehe vartham kopina prichati gehe. Even in your own house, nobody is going to care or to ask, how are you doing? Nobody cares, really. They won't ask. When you're old and useless and can no longer supply any sense gratification to anyone, cannot serve anyone's purpose, then you will find that they will drop you faster than a hot potato. That's love in this material world. So this is the problem. Therefore, it's not really rasa. It is a kind of a perverse pseudo-rasa, ku-rasa, we might say. So, guys, we can start going. I saw this with my mother when she became very old. Then the family didn't really care so much. So if Krishna arranged that I was there, so I gave her prasadam and I took her to the temple and I was sacrificed my life and nearly killed myself doing so. But I hope I did something. But the fact is that nobody will care, and everybody is going to have to face this unless you get killed sooner. And there's no guarantee that you'll make it to old age. Right? We know. Anything can happen. Anything can happen anytime. So, this is the idea. While we have this opportunity of the human form of life, we have to try to use it for the best advantage. And the best advantage is that we can become qualified to actually receive this wonderful fruit, which has actually been given to us through the hard work of Srila Prabhupada. He used his own old age to actually give something back to the world, whether the world appreciated it or not at that point. Now we have this worldwide society of individuals whose lives have been touched by the words that Srila Prabhupada so carefully chose while the world slept. And we assume that Srila Prabhupada's position as sacrosanct is an eternal fact, which it is, actually. But there was a time in the 1950s that Srila Prabhupada was working very hard alone, without any support and with every discouragement possible, simply to fulfill the impossible order of his spiritual master. Who could imagine in those days how in the world you can spread Krishna consciousness in the West? In the West, after the war, World War II, the West was in its absolute zenith. Nobody was in any position to hear about anything renunciation. Everything was going great. 1950s, especially 1960s even. Then the young people Krishna arranged in America, they began to get disgusted with the process of materialism and what it does to you, what it does to your soul, to your heart. And they began to question and look for other alternatives. And then Krishna said, okay, now, go. And Prabhupada got this idea because he was sensitive to it. He was chanting so much in touch every day. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Fervently praying, my dear Lord and your energy, please engage me in your service. And so they said, okay, now the order is there, you have to do this. Pratyabhinya, the Kashmir Shaivas have this nice word. Pratyabhinya, what does it mean? Prati abhignya, recognition. We all hear the instruction, but when do we recognize it? When do we recognize its value? That comes from mercy. So, Srila Prabhupada, of course, we accept he's Nitya Siddha. There's no question of his ever being not Galita, fully matured in the same way. But he recognized the worth of the order of his spiritual master. And yasya devi parabhaktir yatha devi tatha gurau. He invested his faith, equal faith, in the words of Krishna and in the words of his spiritual master, and therefore he recognized the value of the instruction that he had received. And even though there was nothing to encourage him, even though everything was working against him, every conceivable odd was against him, that kind of faith we have to cultivate. It didn't stop him. Against every obstacle, against all the odds, he fulfilled his spiritual master's instructions in a helpless and hopeless way. And Krishna said, okay, When you completely surrender like that, then Krishna comes to your aid. Like the famous verse, Agre Guru Namatha Pandavanam Dushasane Nahrta Vastrakesha Krishna Tarakrosha Rananyanatha Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. Draupadi had lost her five husbands. Even if you have five husbands, then nobody's going to be there to protect you. When the kal is there, manye kal, what is that? Manye, at the end of the Kurukshetra battle, I think it was Yudhishthira, he said, I think that this has all been done by the time factor. Yes, exactly. So that's the idea. Even the sun, who illuminates all the darkness that is natural in this material world, and even the moon, who plays across the sky amidst all the stars, outshining them all, even these great august demigods, they sometimes have to be eclipsed by Rahu Grahan. They have to be swallowed. The conclusion is that likhitam api lalate pronchitam kasamartha, Hitopadesh tells us. Who is that person who can overcome when your time is there? Anyway, so somehow or other, whether we don't like to say that it's through karma with the great souls, it's Krishna's arrangement, it's Leela. But somehow or other, Draupadi found herself in a circumstance where it was what Shakespeare called the slings and arrows of outrageous misfortune. Outrageous misfortune. If you haven't experienced it yet, then just stay alive for another few decades. You'll definitely get it. Definitely you'll get it. Usually everybody has to go through it sometimes in life. And that's because this world is in fact meant as a training ground in order to bring us to this Brahma-Bhuta platform where we're no longer bent out of shape by Shochati or Kankshati. Only when we get in that tranquil equilibrium, state of equilibrium, then we can actually focus on unobstructed devotional service. We can sustain a mature commitment to the principle of pure devotion. Yesham tu antagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam. It's through piety that this is effected. What is the second half? Te dvandva moha nirmukta. This is the idea. We have to become nirmukta from this dvandva moha, the illusions of duality. So the whole system is specifically designed by Krishna just to frustrate us and just to make us miserable and just essentially to bring us to the point of questioning that there has to be a better way. Anyway, so Draupadi, she found herself in this circumstance and she tried to take care of herself at first, but then every one of her shelters was removed. When you really get Krishna's mercy, then that's what he will do to you. He will make sure that you've got no other shelter than him. Yes, yaham nanu grihnami harishye tadhanam shanai. It begins with money. Especially here in India, people value money. Other places, they have other anarthas. But and we've already discussed that once your money has been removed, then all of your friends, all of your relatives... they also go along with it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so she found herself in that circumstance. She tried to take care, but she realized that I've got nothing. And the same thing happened to Gajendra. Same thing. Visrishta viklishta vishaktam. What is that? Savasta bantu. Exactly. So, this is Bilva Mangala Thakur's realization. When he was completely disturbed and there's an alligator there, all of his friends just scattered. Nobody's going to stay around when there's a threat like that. Because any minute that alligator can turn on me, right? That's love in the material world. So in that circumstance also, and he was losing his strength, what could he do but just reach over and pull out a lotus flower with his trunk and say, no, no more, not I, Anaya. But, so it's actually mercy if we get to that state. And you should study the commentaries on this Tetanukampam Susumikshamano verse. Then there are some very nice realizations in this vein. I don't want to dilate too much on that, but the point is that in this way, a person who is forced, either by karma or by Krishna, to invest his faith or her faith only in the holy name, only in Krishna, that person is actually the recipient of great mercy, and a person in that condition can actually come to appreciate what is real rasa. Because in this material world, these so-called rasas, they don't work. They're not supposed to work. They're designed to fail. Planned obsolescence. So Prabhupada has explained this a little bit. And then he goes on to say that ultimately the spiritual exchange, or the real exchange of rasa, is fully exhibited only in relationship with the Supreme Lord. With anyone else, it's only partial. And it's also contaminated. But it's only pure and complete in relationship with the Supreme Lord. And this is confirmed in the Taittiriya Upanishad, famous Shruti mantra, Raso Vaisa Ityadi. That's the Vedic authority for so much of what we, I mean, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is the ocean of all the rasas. It's there in seed form, at least in the Upanishads. So Prabhupada says here, one who attains full knowledge of these different rasas, which are the basic principles of activities, can understand the false representations of the original rasas, which are reflected in the material world. The learned scholar seeks to relish the real rasa in the spiritual form. Now in the beginning he wants to become one, because I mentioned already, pratyabhijna, we recognize that I am one with this thing. That is a valid recognition. Anybody here ever chant your rounds and realize that you're one with the holy name? No. But in some sense you can say it's a fact. In quality we are one with the Lord. He has feelings. We also have feelings, therefore. Desires, feelings, sentience, absolute is sentient. Thou hast proved impersonal calamity, thou hast removed, Prabhupada wrote to his spiritual master. So a person should go beyond that initial realization. If he's progressive, it will be natural, especially if he's taken shelter of the instructions of the Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting the holy name accordingly. So, that's Galitam Amrita Drava Sanyutam. And then Rasika and Bhavuka, these are the two that are addressed here. What does it mean, Rasiks and Bhavuks? What are they? Rasik, you might say, means an aesthete, and Bhavuk means a sentimentalist. Sometimes these words are used negatively, actually, isn't it? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think it was Prakash Ananda Saraswati, he just dismissed Lord Chaitanya. He says, a bhavuk, just a sentimentalist. What we call sahajiyas, that tendency is sometimes the word bhavuka is used for those people as well. And yet the Srimad Bhagavatam is actually addressing them. Feelings are important. One favorable scholar, friend of ISKCON, named Klaus Klostermeyer. Anybody ever heard this name? He spent some time with Srila Prabhupada in the early 1960s here in Vrindavan. In fact, he was living in the Ban Maharaj School of Management and Technology, as it's now morphed. It used to be the Institute of Oriental Philosophy, I think. And my, how things change over time, isn't it? As if the original seed of its of the seed desire that led to that institution's existence had blossomed into its real form. I don't know. But at any rate, he stayed there with Ban Maharaj for some time, and he was also associated with Srila Prabhupada, Kabhi Kabhi. But he wrote a nice essay. He's very learned in Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. He wrote a nice essay called A Universe of Feelings. And he was explaining there that you know, these feelings are actually very important, especially for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, those who are following Srila Rupa Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, others in this line. Feelings are not unimportant. We tend to, in the Vaidhi Sadhaka stage, we tend to dismiss our feelings because they're almost invariably mundane. But they're not necessarily so, and they're certainly not intended as such, and they're not eternally so. In the ultimate analysis, the most important thing is feelings. Because those feelings, they are the basic principles of activities. Think about how Srila Prabhupada translates the word bhakti. How do we find the word bhakti normally translated? Not in Prabhupada's books, but generally, how do we call bhakti in English?
Devotion.
Simple. Love, yeah, you're getting into Prabhupada's. But Prabhupada translates this as either pure devotional service or transcendental loving service, or he very carefully qualifies it, even at the expense of economy and expression. He will expand it to make sure that the idea is firmly implanted in the mind of the person who's hearing. Transcendental devotional service. There are three things going on here. Number one, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma na Shochiti na Kankshiti Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Lavate Param. It has to be transcendental. Means it's affected on this Brahma Bhuta platform that we've already discussed, beyond the dualities of material existence. Number two, it has to be loving. That means the feelings are invested in this. And therefore we have Bhagavatam is addressing the rasikas and the bhavukas, the people who are awake to their heart. People who have not either buried it with selfishness or denied it artificially through jnana, but people who have actually understood that feelings do have eternal play in the relationship between the living being and the Supreme Person, Krishna. So that's transcendental and loving, and then service means you have to do something. It's practical. It's not just theoretical. I said a moment ago that the feelings are the most important thing, but look how Prabhupada says it. One who attains full knowledge of these different rasas, which are the basic principles of activities, he doesn't let you get away without this practical component. You've got to do something for Krishna. You've got to invest whatever energy or whatever assets you've been given in this short span of karmic existence within the material world. You've got to place it at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, under the guidance of his pure representative. So that's an example. We can unpack this statement that Prabhupada translates. Pure devotional service, it's kind of the same idea. He's very careful in this way, and throughout all of his books, they're so voluminous because he takes that pain to make it clear exactly what's being expressed here. So when we say rasikas and bhavukas, this has to be understood. Not just sentimental, without activity, or without mature realization and genuine transcendence. They all have to be there at the same time. And a whole bhuvi means it's an expression of the rarity of this attainment. It's very, very rare. He's therefore exclaiming, oh, amazing, you don't see people like this in this world. That's the implication. So, muhu pibataha. You have to drink it regularly, or always. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Now he comes to this interesting point as well. Alaya. What does alaya mean?
Room.
Yeah, place. Rasam alayam. It's the abode of all rasas. Just like we say, the lotus feet of the spiritual master are also the abode of devotion. Bhakti sadma, right? Sri Guru Charana Padma Kevala Bhakti Sadma. That's where bhakti doesn't live anywhere else except in the two lotus feet of your spiritual master. You're not going to find it at the cloth market. Not even in Rasbihari Lal's store. It's only in the lotus feet of the spiritual master. But alayam doesn't just mean that. And not here. At least not according to Sridhar Swami, nor Srila Prabhupada in his purport. What does he say? Alaya. As Sridhar Swami says, alayam, layo mokshaha, abhivithal akada, layam abhivyapya. You got it? Laya means moksha. So alaya, even up to the point of moksha, and vyapya, he says it within moksha. Everything within moksha, everything included, you're still going to drink this Bhagavatam even as if you're a liberated soul. This is the idea. And therefore, he concludes by quoting the famous verse elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Atmaramascha munayo nirgrantha api urkrame kurvantya hetakim bhaktim ittham bhuta gonos harihi. That Shukdev Goswami is a good example of that also. We know the story we heard, I think, the other day, that even though he was a liberated soul, he was still attracted by this Srimad Bhagavatam, and look how attracted. He's the one that we get it from. He's preaching Srimad Bhagavatam since time immemorial now. So that goes to show that even in the liberated state, when a person is beyond all need of reformation, because he's already in a transcendental position, even there, in order to, how do you want to say, in order to dive into this ocean of Rasamrit, then that person still is going to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's going to go up. Muhu pivata. That's the idea. So I'm going to stop here. As I said, I didn't really have much time to prepare, but if anybody has any questions or comments on anything, yes, please.
You told about this Nigama and Agama. Is it that Nigama is Shruti and Agama is Smriti Shastra, something like that?
No, it's not like that. Shruti and Smriti would be the Nigama. That's my understanding. And the Agama would be these corollary literatures such as, tantras and like Brahma Samhita, for example, is considered to be an Agama. It's kind of an amorphous class of, technically speaking, non-Vedic literatures. But I suspect that because this is an academic definition, you may find differences of opinion here. But that's my understanding. Anybody else has anything to add here? Anything else? Yeah.
And just remember, as an additional comment, that Krishna gives, as well as Sridhar Swami's point of view, he also adds an extra spice to it, that laya can be one of the yavichari bhavas, so fainting.
Devastation, yeah.
So you just drink it until you faint, and then when you regain consciousness,
you faint again. Who but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur could say such a thing? Very typical statement. Thank you. Anything else? Yeah.
In this purport, Prabhupada mentioned that relationships, rasa, can exist between members of the same species.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It's a perennial question as well. How is it so? Because sometimes we see a person has a dog, the dog is very faithful to the master, the person becomes attached to the dog also. It would seem that there's some sort of rasa. My understanding of that situation is that the rasa is there, but it's perverted. And we don't really consider a perverted rasa to be a real rasa. As I mentioned, paraphrasing Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Anybody know this verse? Jadi kavya raso nahi kavya rasa? I don't remember the whole verse, but there's a verse like that in one of his songs. He mentions that, this so-called rasa in the material world, it's not really rasa. That's how I read this.
Kalipava, the older rasa.
That's right, yeah. I mean, because, you know, Prabhupada mentions that any other species, you know, that means that sometimes if people become excessively devoted to demigods, and they develop some relationship, and it would seem there's some exchange vrasa there as well. So how does it work? I think you have to interpret it in this way. At least that's how I see it. I may be wrong. Anything else? Yeah, that's right. Real rasa goes on. Brahma sokhyam tvanantam. That's real rasa. And unreal rasas are going to be limited like that. Let's see if we'll...
Yeah, just along the lines of what you're saying, I remember Rupa Goswami gave a few examples in the rasa vasa section about animals and like old ladies or people from different castes like Brahmanis and things like that. I have a question though. The address to the rasikas and the bhavikas, it seems quite surprising historically, because the elaboration on rasa really came, seems a little bit after the Bhagavatam. Like, we don't hear the 12 rasas described directly in the Bhagavatam, or it kind of came later with Bharata Muni, and then it got developed more and more. It seems like there was always the idea there, because Prabhupada quotes rasa vaisaha and like the one you quoted, but
yeah, it's there even in, as I said, in the Shruti Mantra, and that's why he's quoting the Shruti Mantra, just to demonstrate that this is not a new thing. I think you can say it's new in the sense that it was systematized later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's implicit throughout the Bhagavatam, and I think it is in the Bhagavatam as well. It's just not explicit, or it's not, you know, presented as a cohesive system.
Right.
But it's definitely there. I mean, we find so many verses that are, you know, implying the same principle as you know, yam krodha kama sahaja pranayadi bhiti vatsali moha ityadi. Same principles are there in the Bhagavatam.
Seems like it might have even been quite esoteric at the time.
Well, Bhagavatam itself is esoteric.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, most transcendentalists are not so advanced that they can dive into this. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We can't. It's a rare thing. That's the Manushyanam Sahasreshu principle.
It's also interesting to think, who is Shukadev Goswami addressing those addresses to? We usually think of it as an assembly of sages. You know, I mean, maybe Narada and Vyasa were there, but who are the Rasikas and the Bhavakas?
You know, it's like when a person gives a Bhagavatam class in a large audience, he says, you know, those of you who are thoughtful, please take note. Something like that. That's, you know, that seems a common sense approach. Yeah, it is very rare. It's very rare, this thing. Not necessarily because, I mean, it's rare only because people are inclined otherwise. Otherwise, it's definitely sitting in the hearts of all living beings, but it's not that easy to reconnect once you come into this material world. It's just not that hard. It's very hard to do that. Okay, anything else? Otherwise, we can stop.
Well, you said Bhavaki sentimentalist. How do you define Rasik?
I usually translate it as aesthete. Aesthete meaning somebody who knows aesthetics.
Okay.
Somebody who's a refined connoisseur, which sometimes we translate it also. How does Prabhupada translate rasika usually? Well, he's done here. Expert. Rasaknya, what does Sridhar Swami says? Rasa visheshu bhavana chaturaha. That's bhavuka. Rasa vishesha bhavana chaturaha. He's very expert in the moods of, you know, specific moods. And rasika means simply rasaknya. Somebody who knows rasa. Okay, so we'll stop here. It's getting late. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.